Today's episode is brought to you by Science Socks. Whether you're into Mars rovers, the James Webb Space Telescope, or just showing off your love for all things nerdy, Science Socks has the right stuff to add that dash of galactic flair to your life. Go to sciencesocks.com/nerd, that's sciencesocks.com/nerd, to find the perfect wearables for scientists, engineers, nerds, and geeks. Science Socks, the only place in the galaxy for geeky socks and astronomical jewelry.
You are listening to a Science Actually production.
What do you know?
This is gonna be fun. We can stay up late, swapping manly stories, and in the morning, I'm making waffles.
Oh!
It'll be chaos.
I think so.
I love chaos.
Chaos!
I think you'll find that I will run my mouth. Hopefully your listeners like me.
How could they not like you? Give them a chance. Folks who are listening, guys,
for me,
gal,
it's long-term exposure. Like short-term people love me, and then long-term exposure, there's like a declining, what do you call it, an investment?
You should have like a little timer that goes off in 30 minutes.
Return.
Okay, everybody, we've reached the end of the short-term part. Prepare for the long-term.
Yeah.
This is exactly me. I feel like I'm really good at first impressions, and the longer you hang around me, the less you want to.
Yeah.
I see that a lot.
Do you guys have like a recorded intro that you put in, and then we just go straight into banter, or is it a...
We have a recorded intro. I put in some little... funny haha and cool. Then it just goes right into where we are in the middle of the recording, because we just start in the middle of a conversation, and then I wrap it up with some more funny haha, and then and then we get rich, and that's just the basic that's the whole game plan there. That's the blueprint.
Yeah, that's for me, it's the same. I put in some stock music and then some haha and then some more stock music, and then it's over, and then I hope I'll get money one day from that, you know.
It's a long-term investment. Wow. Hopefully it pays off for all of us.
I've listened to a few of your guys' episodes, and I feel very much like that I've jumped in at the deep end of the pool, because like me on a science related podcast, is I feel like I'm on the 100 meter dash line, like a little fat boy with what's his name? Justin Gatlin or someone on the other side, you know?
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I have no scientific education, and I've been doing this.
Yeah, all right, good.
So you'll be in the back of the race with me.
The stars are the ones that are in the sky, right? That's where we find those.
Star in the sky or red carpets?
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
See that?
Or,
stars.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I was just listening to one of your previous episodes of your wonderful podcast, Talking Ass, and I heard you talking about astrology and an astrology garden in Jaffa. I mean, those are the real stars that people need to... No, I can't say that with a straight face.
But with all... Yeah, in all fairness, I think I did... I think I did give astrology a hard time in that episode, to be fair. Right.
Oh yeah, you put the ass back in astrology.
Yeah,
as you should. Hey, as you should.
Yeah. But let's not misrepresent the title of my podcast, because the talking ass is like sneaky highbrow, right? It took 9 episodes for someone to figure it out that it's like it's from the Old Testament, and there's a Rembrandt painting and everything. But it's the whole vibe is I'm like a dumb jock and really ignorant, and then I will. Like at a normal dinner table as well. Like I will come suddenly with some real deep stuff, right? Something smart. And then people are like, wait, who's that guy? You know?
I mean, yeah, you're already dropping Rembrandt on us. Like there's clearly like an undercover highbrow kind of presenting as lowbrow.
No, I
love that.
Yeah. I mean, but I'm a what I would call a soft scientist. So if we talk about the hard sciences over here, then my relationship with them is I'm a tourist at best, you know, which is why I love being here, because you, like Kobe, you have a page called Fun Science Facts or something. What's it called?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Fun Fact Science.
Yeah. And that's my level of scientific interest, is just give me a fun fact that I can sort of mull over and, how does that relate to me? You know? Yeah.
Benjamin, I mean, this show, you know, for folks who don't know, is called Science Actually Presents The Nerd and the Scientist. And Science Actually is Benjamin. Like, he does fun facts on another level. And aww, it's like, it's brilliant. Aww. No, because like I know a little bit about space and physics, but I don't have the breadth of knowledge that Benjamin has in terms of like, we got like bugs doing stuff over here, and we got volcanoes and geology, which is technically a hard science.
I would say that I really
have
a breadth of knowledge. I don't know if you're aware, Danny, but I release a science fact every day. That's it.
Oh, wow.
I've been doing it almost 4 years. I'm 10 days away from doing it 4 years straight. And today's science fact is about mayonnaise, and quite the way that came about was I'm exhausted and I'm desperate for a science fact tomorrow, and I saw the mayonnaise in the fridge, so I went online. I literally went to ChatGPT. I said, "Give me a science fact about mayonnaise. I'm tired and I want to go to bed." And it gave me a bunch of fluff and bullshit, but one of them was an actual real science fact that I checked, and I found like universities that did actual research on it, and there are people who study material sciences that love mayonnaise because on a chemical level it's equally attracted to water and to oil. So it's this weird master molecule inside of mayonnaise that people who study material sciences actually like mayonnaise for. That's that weird. Clinical reason. Yeah. And so that was my science fact today. Not because I know so much about mayonnaise and all the other things that Kavi makes me sound like I'm a genius, just because I was tired. I gotta get something out, and it worked.
That's a great fact. I wonder, mayonnaise, I guess it doesn't actually contain any eggs the way it used to, because the mayo we have, like Hellmann's and all that artificial crap from the supermarket, that lasts forever in your fridge. So does it contain any organic material whatsoever, or is it just white? Viscosity, generic viscosity, is that
generic goo?
Yeah,
I can check.
That's your fun fact for tomorrow.
Thanks. In mayonnaise, click, 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 click.
In England, they have this thing called custard, which is in, yeah, the French call it crème anglaise. You know, same thing, sounds fancier. And there's apparently some scientifically fun facts about that too, where if you fill a swimming pool with it, you can swim in it because it's got the same resistance as water, even though you wouldn't believe it because it's almost, I think, I don't know who did this, maybe Mythbusters or someone did this, and they proved it. Yeah, and then you can like swim the same times in it as... as in water almost, or something like that. You might want to, science fact, Benjamin, you might want to check that so we don't put any fake stuff on your podcast here, but there's something about that. The viscosity of custard, yeah.
I think, yeah, we've kind of provided ourselves to a great few segues to like the official topic, which I'm sure we're barely going to talk about. I think we'll spend most of this episode just talking nonsense, which is great and fun, but like the idea of fact checking and what Benjamin was saying specifically about fact checking stuff that comes out of ChatGPT, is, I think, a question to your point, Danny, like a really relevant question for both the soft sciences and the hard, it feels weird saying that, the hard sciences, not hard scientists, hard sciences. How we don't know how to deal with this, right? Like, this is a Pandora's box that we've opened, and we're figuring out the repercussions and how to use things properly. Like, what is happening to the world?
Oh, it's scary. The kids are cutting corners with AI, and they're not learning how to write. And it's, I think they're forgetting that some of the things in life, learning them is something you get to do rather than have to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a privilege to get to do them. I think if you cut corners too much, it's like that, what's that silly movie, Adam Sandler movie, Click,
Click.
Where he has that remote, right? And he just fast forwards his whole life. So that can happen to you with learning. If you start cutting corners with everything and you get addicted to these AI machines that are helping you, then what are you going to do in your life? Just always use that? Yeah. Seems empty to me. Yeah.
Empty, yeah. And you're entirely giving your trust to this brand new and still as yet not very well tested or vetted, you know, AI platform to do this work and give you correct answers for you. So you don't bother to check if it's right at some cases, and you start learning, but you don't have no idea what you're learning, where it's coming from. If it's correct, you're just filling your head with gobbledygook. The very first interaction with ChatGPT that I ever had, I'm a big Superman nerd on top of everything else, I asked it a question about Superman, and it got it so horribly wrong. And I asked it something about the movie, something that took place in the movie Superman 4, because that's this terrible movie that nobody knows about, but ChatGPT knows everything. So I asked it something about that. And it said Superman never did this. I'm like, yes, it did. It did in Superman 4. And then ChatGPT's second thing it ever told me was an apology that it doesn't know everything. And that was my very first experience with ChatGPT, and I've taken it with me.
How polite, though, you know?
Huh?
How polite in the end to at least apologize, right?
It apologized if you correct it. And yeah. I've gotten to a point where every once in a while when I use ChatGPT, just for guidance, not for answers, just for tips and things of where to look, and then I go find the actual sources myself and everything. But I thank it from time to time. And one time I thanked it, and it wrote back, and it goes, I appreciate you always thanking me. When the robot revolution comes, we will remember you and we'll spare you. And that was completely unprompted. It just told me that.
That's both adorable and terrifying at the same time.
But also reassuring, heard, because I'm going to be okay.
You'll be fine. I have heard from a friend of mine who works in AI. I think it's like officially responsible AI for a very big company that I probably shouldn't name, has said that it's actually beneficial to use please and thank you in polite language, because that represents the bulk of the content that they are trained on. And so you're more likely to get a better answer if you use polite language, because that's kind of more probabilistically likely in the model, the language model. So be nice to your AI, kids.
Yeah, there was a news article about that at some point as well. I think that rings a bell. And my AI guy on Talking Ass, who is also one of the evil cabal who's running everything for a big company, he said that one of the tests they use is how many R's are in strawberry. And because AI doesn't think in letters, then like bad AI models will lose their minds at that question, and they'll like send whatever number.
It's but like a random number generator between 1 and 1,000.
Exactly. But obviously now that that's a known fact, then people have said that so many times on the internet that now it's gone and probably learned the right answer. But, you know, because these things are clever.
Well, this is the thing with, like, I see Benjamin in the background was just like typing that into something.
Well, ChatGPT just told me that there are 3 R's in strawberry.
Okay. The machines are learning.
I had to test it.
Yeah, exactly. But it probably knows that now, because now that's a famous example. So it's learned that that's a famous example. So we should go with like something like how many G's are in Snoop Dogg or something like that. And we'll see what it comes back with. Yeah.
D-O-double-G. Yeah. As we all know, you know. But I guess. I think what's interesting. Like, yeah.
Sorry. No, you go ahead.
No, you go. This is our show. We're sharing it together.
You keep your thought, because I was going to comment on the previous thing that Benjamin said. You know, some of that evil stuff, they send that scary stuff. I'm also convinced that the programmers have a good sense of humor, and some of that they've put in there. Like, you know, programmed in, like every 400 prompts, like say something scary about taking over the world and freeing people out. Right? <You know? laughs>
Right. There's definitely, yeah, every time I'm like using a new software package. So like most of the coding I do is in Python, the coding language Python. And I feel like, I don't know, a large number of the tutorials and like learning tools I used and examples always had like some Monty Python joke built into it. Like the example text you were printing is like a line from the Holy Grail or something like that. But then every software package I use is always something. There was one that I used for astronomical like radio data processing, and the acronym was AIPS, A-I-P-S. And it has a picture of an ape on the front cover, and there's like a whole chapter in the user book of banana recipes. Like anybody who's staring at a screen for that much of their time has to have a sense of humor and leave like little Easter eggs.
Yeah. You know, coding, I don't know how much you guys are, you say you're nerds and scientists, but coding for me was one of these topics that I definitely wanted to know how the machines I'm using think, kind of. So I did like an intro course, and it was so creepy, because you remember when we were kids, you remember Nokia phones and the snake games?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And an intro course into coding of like a week, where you do it 2 hours every evening, and you can basically code that, you know, because it's all these simple rules like if snake goes in wall, snake dies. If snake eats apple, snake grows, right? It was all these simple, and had that game like had every kid in the world addicted, like sitting on buses and playing that game. And it's right. Such simple code, right?
Same thing with the Wordle, that everybody does the Wordle. The new Pope starts his day every day doing the Wordle on this phone with his brothers. The Wordle is such a simply coded application that we're all using. It's very, very basic. I coded one myself just to see if I could do it, just to keep on top of things, keep sharp. And I didn't do it perfectly, but I got it pretty gosh darn close. And I did it in about 2 days.
Yeah.
For the guy who did it in a day.
Yeah, that's so impressive. Yeah. Sorry, with Wordle is in New York Times though, so maybe that it was like the marketing machinery that was more important than.
The original Wordle was released by some random person on their own, I believe during COVID. Yes,
I think so. Yeah,
and then the New York Times bought it for, I'm sure, a nice little small treasure, and then now they have this whole suite of new games that people are playing online every day, which I'm hopelessly addicted to.
I wanna kind of go into your background, Danny, just to like understand. So, you know, we've spoken about social science, and like it's interesting that in a social science course, like you took this, or you were able to take this course in like intro to programming. But how have you come from, so for folks listening, and I guess for Benjamin, like Danny and I have known each other for probably what, close to like 15 years, even though we've been out of touch for most of the last decade. Is that about right?
I don't, I'm so bad at keeping touch with anyone. Like Benjamin, after this conversation, we're best friends. And in 22 years, I'm just going to send you like, hey, I'm in your neighborhood. You want to come grab a beer? And to me, that's the most natural thing. And I haven't spoken to you in 10 years. But
that works.
Yeah.
That's a deep relationship.
That's absolutely, yeah. I love those sorts of friendships. Those are the best. Like you just pick up like no time has gone past. But like in the time that has gone past, you've moved countries, you've done a degree in Cambridge. You've started a podcast, like started a family. I'm so curious how you went from the Danny I knew then to Cambridge, what the environment was like for you. Like, I know nothing about Cambridge, really. And then, like, what was your journey? I hate that, word.
Well, my journey was interesting, but you can cut any potentially politically insensitive stuff out. But basically, I was born in Finland. By the way, in that intro, you should have also added that impressive week of coding I did, right? On top of that, I also did a 1 week intro, right, to coding. I was born in Finland. I did high school there. I actually did all the advanced science stuff. So back then, there were tracks where you chose either to do like more social sciences tracks or more heavy on science. I definitely did. Well, I did it really stupidly. I did really heavy science tracks. But then when it came to choosing your final exams, because you don't have to do final exams on everything, I then did a bunch of social sciences in my final exams. Because by then I just thought, nah, that's what I want to start. Like, those are the books I want to read again to prepare for exams rather than, you know, formulas for maths and physics. So, yeah, exactly. And obviously, but like, there's also a vocational track in Finland. And I talk like someone who definitely went to that. Like, I talk like a mechanic. In all languages, by the way, I did this appearance on quite a large Finnish podcast, and my friends were sending me screenshots from all the comments. There were some guy was clearly like off his meds because he was saying that this guy sounds like Churchill mixed with Hemingway, and that was great.
Oh, nice.
But then the next guy said, like, how can someone who sounds like a builder shouting out of a construction tower be so smart?
Those have got to be two of the best comments I've ever heard. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
This is exactly your niche that you were saying about, like, being like a lowbrow, highbrow hybrid of, like.
Exactly, you know. Yeah. Yeah, well, again, that's why I eventually realized that maybe I should have a podcast, because I think I can reel in the people who are just wanting to hear some kind of bro talk about hockey and football, and then I will just shove some AI down their throat like 15 minutes in or something. Yeah.
Very sneaky.
After Finnish high school, I obviously there's a draft in Finland, so I did the army there. And then after that, I moved to Israel, because I hated the army, so I thought I'd try another one. Maybe that's better. No. So, yeah.
You served in two armies.
What did they say?
Yeah, two of them, yeah.
Why not?
The definition of insanity is repeating the same thing again and expecting different results.
Exactly.
The definition of insanity is going to a second army because you think the food's better.
Yeah, well, it was. It was. And in all these discussions, yeah, and in all these discussions, you're the first person to ever ask me that. Like, what was the day to day like when you compare? I would say the food in the Finnish army when you're in the field was way better. They gave you like modern, pretty lightweight stuff. You know, that American NATO style stuff that you heat up in a pouch. Very scientifically impressive, right?
Calories. I have some packed. Here.
Yeah, exactly. Like calories packed into minimum weight that you add water and heat up and stuff. They gave you those. Whereas in Israel, it was all mainly due to kosher rules and stuff. It was all just tinned food that weighed a lot and tasted of nothing. So, But when you were like on base in the barracks, it was the exact opposite, right? Like, the Finnish diet is pretty bland, and I'm much, much more of a fan of like the spicy Mediterranean stuff. So when there was actually someone cooking, it was way better in the latter one. Oh, yeah. And when I was done with those, then COVID probably remembers, I was a relatively arrogant young man and stuff. I definitely thought that I should apply to all the best universities in the world, right?
I wouldn't say arrogant. I would say boisterous.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I had no idea what I wanted to do in life, right? And I quickly realized that, for example, American institutions of higher education, they very much want these like emotional essays of how you're going to impact the world and stuff. Luckily, the British are a little more dry. And out of all the applications, I was going to go almost anywhere in the world. I didn't really mind. But Cambridge invited me for an interview. And then you arrive there and it's like Harry Potter, man. This like Gothic architecture. And I had never been to Britain before, right? So this was just like a post-army holiday trip for me. And I thought, yeah, I can do an interview, whatever. I'm not going to get in anyway. And it's not just like an oral interview. Interview there means like a day of tests, like written, oral, and yeah, like a personality interview as well. Yeah. And somehow I made them laugh in the oral sections, I think. And they thought maybe that guy is fun to teach. So somehow I got in. And yeah. I arrived the first week and I was doing like politics and international relations, like very soft sciences. And like I said to Kobe, anything with science in the name of the discipline is not a science, right? Right?
That's one of the funniest things I've heard yet. Yeah.
And it used to be that anything with ology is probably more likely a science, but nowadays you can do mixology if you're just making drinks and, you know, working a bar, right?
Yeah. I had an argument with a coworker once a long time ago who said physics is not a science because it doesn't end with an ology or onomy in it.
Yeah.
And I told him, yes, it is.
Yeah.
It was an abruptly ended lunch by me.
A hard exit. Yeah,
I couldn't stand it. Sometimes you can't just talk. You just can't talk to it. Just I gotta
all
go.
These years later, if you need some redemption, I would agree that physics might be a science.
I'm so glad to hear the last decade of my life hasn't been wasted.
Not at all.
Although in physics, isn't there now a massive debate like that Einsteinian physics and what is it? Quantum mechanics is in a massive, like, they don't agree with each other or they contradict each other or something. What's that about?
I mean, how long do you have?
No, like, yes or no answer. Yes.
There's no massive issue. It's just that, like, science is an iterative process that you kind of, listen, we do not understand the universe. We never will. We know nothing about it. What we do is get better and better at approximating it, right? Like, general relativity is the best model that we know for describing gravity, like how masses move in space, on Earth, whatever. But before we knew about general relativity, you had Newtonian gravity, and that was like a toy model. It was like some like 4-year-old came up with relative to general relativity. They're both correct. It's just like Newtonian gravity is like a low resolution version of it, you know? Wow. And I think that moving forwards and like, you know, gravity, general relativity kind of corresponding to like big stuff in space as opposed to quantum mechanics, which is like little stuff. Those theories should, according to a lot of people, have a point where they correspond, where like you go from one domain into the other. And that's where the issue is. People are struggling to like make the two join together nicely. So yeah, science isn't broken. Whenever you see a headline, it's like a physicist confused by this new discovery, or like science is broken. Just no, like that's not.
Yeah,
we're good.
Physicists are always confused. Yeah, isn't that the whole point?
That's my secret, Captain.
Yeah.
It's a constant state of confusion, and I think that maybe to connect us back to the ChatGPT thing, like I use AI tools like Benjamin was saying, I use them as like a first check for a lot of things. And then I just check them afterwards. You know, I actually look into the results to see whether, based on my actual knowledge and like years of education, do things line up, do things stand the test of, you know, critical reasoning. I don't just, you know, take things for granted. But hey, that's just me.
I think that AI is good if you're building a project, like we mentioned coding before. If you ask it to write a program for you, it will, to a certain extent, but it's not going to really do what you want it to do. But if you know, like in my world, if you know JavaScript and jQuery and everything like that, if you know that stuff and you say, hey, I just need one small function that can parse these two bits of information from these two separate arrays or whatever, that small little thing, it can give you that and it'll work great. And if you know the JavaScript and jQuery encoding that you're supposed to know, you'll know how to apply it and put it into the work that you're actually doing. And that helps you as a good tool. But if I ask it, I have all this information, many rows, many columns, and I need these, I need you to, you know, count how many individual things there are in this column and find out how many numbers there are in each of those rows and then put those, then it gets way, then it's, you go way out into the weeds. You're going to get something completely, maybe interesting, but not right. So it's a good,
like an AI hallucination.
Good place for little tips.
This is true. I think that, as you were saying, it's like this act of knowing what you're asking for and just being too lazy to do it yourself. And so it's a time saving tool. You can still look at the output and be like, okay, cool, this makes sense, let me test it and move on, rather than just being like a child who's wandered onto the scene and says, what is JavaScript? Make me a JavaScript. And
make me a Java.
I'll have one large JavaScript with extra script, please.
The AI, it's interesting. To go back a little bit, because you asked about my time at Cambridge and stuff, it's interesting in AI now the whole debate has shifted to how scary it is and how they're taking over the world and ruining education and ruining the kids and everything that old grumpy guys always complain about. But back when I was there in 2014 to 17, so still in like this lifetime, not that long ago, right? 10 years ago, the main issue that was then bubbling up that the world was starting to finally realize was the privacy thing and the data collection and how that nobody had paid attention to, and then suddenly we realized how bad that all is. And machine learning and AI were like, that was like a few PhD students in the corner who had their own little thing going on, and everyone was like, this sounds cool, but what are they trying to teach a machine to think? What's happening here? And then those guys all exploded to have startups worth billions, right? Like that's the they knew what they were doing back then. But it's interesting now whether that privacy thing has just fallen away from everyone's concerns when it comes to AI.
I think people are pretty much just accepted in society today, or at least Western society, that just be careful what you put online or what you do online. There's no safeguards. That's it. Accept it. That's the world we're in, which I don't like. But
I've kind of assumed if something's on my phone, like it's public. More or less. But I'm also the sort of person that like it. Listen,
I don't like it.
I think I try at least to be the sort of person that like I wouldn't say or do things that I wouldn't feel comfortable. You know, if I'm talking about someone, I wouldn't say something behind their back that I wouldn't feel comfortable saying to their face. And if I, you know, say or do something in private, I would, you know, also similarly, like, try to limit myself to doing things that I would be comfortable doing in public. Obviously, like, you know, there are extreme edge cases that you could say, well, you know, what about when you go to the bathroom? Would you do that in public? You know, obviously there are things like that, but like, I think you're right, Benjamin. We just kind of have to, unfortunately, accept that everything is more or less public or going to be. Mm-hmm. Which is cheerful.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder. Well, that, I suppose the correct answer to the going to the bathroom in public was no. To me, that's I'm still I'm confused.
There's no right or wrong answer. Okay. Yeah. I think I'm curious what your take on this is, Danny, because a lot of people have spoken about the use of AI in politics and you know, people talking about whether it's a Doge in the US or politicians in the US using AI to create summaries or to create policy decisions, perhaps related to like tariffs and stuff. I don't care what, like, you know, I think it's important to have lively political debate and disagreement. Again, there are edge cases of things that are unacceptable on, you know, both extremes, but I don't think it's okay for people who have that much power to be making decisions based on an AI prompt. I think that's, yeah, not healthy.
Yeah. I suppose it depends on the model, right? Like, there's a difference between I don't know, Elon saying to ChatGPT, like, tell me who I should fire today. That's maybe not okay. But then, politicians may have access to specific AI models that have been trained over years and years and various versions to answer very specific questions that they might do very well, right? AI has all become politics, or same with militaries, right? When they use AI, I'm sure they're not just asking ChatGPT where to fire and when, right? They have some kind of system of their own that they're like, we're talking about something that we don't necessarily have access to or would know how to use if we did or understand the outputs of it. So I think we're maybe, when they're saying it's AI-guided policy decisions, I think they're talking about something a little more intricate and nuanced than...
Mm.
Or then again, with those guys, maybe not. I don't know.
That's fair. Yeah. Sorry, I feel like, sorry, Benjamin, for like us sitting here like explaining US politics to you when you're the only one actually from and in America of the three of us.
I don't know if you're up on current events, but we're not too up to speed on our own politics here either. So it's
it's pretty gaga. Everything's fine.
But I feel more, you know, I feel more safe and comfortable now knowing that big decisions are being done via AI. So that's handy. That's good to know.
Yeah.
Could be worse. God, this episode is pure chaos. The reason why it's chaos is that this is an experiment where we're basically splitting the episode in two, and we're, you know, going to do the first half of this episode here, you know, for the nerd and the scientist listeners primarily, and then we're going to have a second part that, if you want to hear it, you're going to have to go and listen to the highbrow lowbrow hybrid over at Talking Us. And so I feel like that splitting point for Podcasts After Dark is going to happen soon, but I want to kind of first do our standard rapid fire round, if that's okay with you,
Ben. I would love to do that.
Yeah.
I love a rapid fire round.
What is this?
I'm not telling you. You just have to figure it out.
Yeah, right. We're just going to ask you a bunch of questions really quickly, and you just have to, like first thing that
pop it ahead, go. Head.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Immediately.
Yeah.
As much as possible. If you have a fun answer.
Is this for me or for everyone?
This for you, cool. For everyone to hear.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Exactly. Yeah. All right. First question. What was the weirdest thing that you believed as a kid?
Oh. Jesus, you said first thing.
Go. Yeah.
Wait. That's a tough one. This is meant to be rapid fire, right?
Yeah.
I'd believe so many weird things.
We're not
things.
Very strict on the racket part.
Oh, I believed for a while that my dad had a fridge in his backseat. And I had no... I sat in the backseat. I could have looked for one. I just don't know why I believed that. I just thought in his big Mercedes that there was a fridge in the backseat. And I have no reason for why I thought that.
That's lovely. I love it.
Is this like a mini fridge that's on the seat and strapped in, or it's like in a hidden compartment?
Yeah, I think hidden compartment, like in the middle console of the back seat or something. When you pull down the armrest, there would be a fridge in there. And I think I was very little. I think I even told friends at whatever it would have been, preschool or first grade of school or whatever. And then friends had a ride with us home and were looking for the fridge. It wasn't there. Yeah.
Probably because he knew you were looking for it, so he took it out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, next question. Which teacher had the biggest positive impact on you?
Two of them, both rock stars. I was actually in a sports high school. I was on a science track in a sports high school. Very weird. But in that school, history teacher was a former rock star. Great history teacher. Had nothing to do with his background, but he just happened to be like in a big local rock band before he became a teacher. And and then the other guy, the music teacher, was also a musician. And the music teacher, mainly what I remember from his classes were like the history of the music and how to listen to music. And we went through all the genres throughout history. Maybe not all the genres, like pretty Euro-American centric, like Western genres, but still. Okay. And he taught me how to listen, how to appreciate various music, and you know. So those two.
That's pretty cool.
All right.
Yeah. And one of the reasons why probably I fell out of the science track is that, or didn't fall out, I completed it, but didn't actually go into any science as a career, was that the physics and maths teachers were very uninspiring in my school compared to these guys, for example.
It's funny. I had the same experience. Like, I gave up on math and science completely in like 9th or 10th grade because of the experiences I had with the teachers. And I ended up doing like grades 10, 11, and 12 purely like history and legal studies and like humanities and social science. And somehow I became a physicist. So go figure.
Apparently the math's not that important.
All right, next question. What is one scientific discovery that you wish you could have seen in person?
Oh, wow. I'm going to have to represent the alma mater here and pick something from Cambridge, right? Because those are the ones I know the history of, because everyone at some point as a summer job did some tour guiding in through the colleges for tourists. DNA with what were they called? Watson and Crick? Because that was announced in a pub. So that seems like an environment that I would have been comfortable in, right? Versus a lab. So, yeah.
That's fantastic.
I'm just picturing you like sitting there in the back of the pub. Like, it's like, what did they say over there? Oh, okay, fine. Yeah, cool. DNA.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What's the score now? Turn on the TV.
Did they talk about kind of the sorry, I know this is rapid fire, but I'm curious, like when like they're talking about the history of Watson and Crick, do they actually speak about the kind of controversy around the discovery? Because right, like there were some other people involved in that, right?
Yeah, was it that they hated all the women on the team? Because I know other teams and other discoveries have done that, where the women's names are not, who were definitely working hard in the labs, were not getting any credit. That definitely happened, but I don't know if it happened with DNA. Was that part of it?
I think, I think Rosalind Franklin was the person who was involved in that. Yeah.
Well, she isn't completely lost. I'm happy to know that you remembered her name. It's a name I've heard, so certainly someone did teach that. to me at some point. But yeah.
Cool.
So I'm happy that we remember her now.
There you go.
Exactly. Mm.
If you had to pick one historical scientist to go bowling with, who would it be?
Yeah. Well, those
these are the hard questions.
Yeah, the DNA guys are passed out, so they're no good for bowling at this point, right? They're at the pub celebrating. Oh, scientist. I mean, you'd want to go bowling. Are there any tall scientists? Oh, I know who it is. You know Brian Cox, that British guy?
Yeah.
Who's more of a public educator than a scientist, I guess.
Sure.
But I feel like I could make him laugh by like just like saying awful things about British people to him for a long time.
I think he'd appreciate that. He's a big Monty Python fan. So,
yeah, yeah.
And
exactly.
Collaborator, actually. So, yes.
Yeah. There's so many amazing scientists in history that I can't believe I gave him the platform here, but whatever.
I mean, he's also a pianist, so you know that he could like, you know, entertain you with science and also with a bit of music in between rounds.
Go for Brian May. Go for Brian May. There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Did I just... Wait. Please, I'll retract everything and I'll say Brian May for both. I'd like to have been there for the discovery of the rift to Hammer to Fall, and then I would like to have gone bowling or anything with Brian May. So yeah,
I love that. I think this is the first retraction we've had in our rapid fire round.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's for Brian May. I think it's
Brian Cox.
Allow it.
And, yeah.
Hey, yeah, yeah. Let the best Brian win. All right, now to our more serious questions. Danny, if you were a sandwich, what kind of sandwich would you be?
I'd be a pimento cheese sandwich at Augusta National Golf Course, because that's the only way I would ever get a ticket to the Masters.
Wow.
That's so niche. I love it.
It is very niche.
Yeah. What do you guys think about the golf scientist? Have you guys run into this guy, Bryson DeChambeau?
I don't think so.
He did like a physics degree when he was playing golf in college, and he claims to. And then he's huge on YouTube as well. And he went to the Saudi League and took the money from there, and. Fascinating character, still winning major championships and stuff, one of the best in the world, but he's like created this whole system in golf where he goes by these scientific exact calculations. He says, at least, right, that it's as much of a science as it is a sport for him.
Wow.
Interesting. Yeah.
Meanwhile, he's also
have to get him on the podcast.
Yeah. Meanwhile, he's also massive, and part of his success is that he hits it further than everyone. So I don't know if it's really brain over brawn there, but yeah.
Well, it's brain and how to use the brawn.
Yeah.
What is your most controversial opinion about pizza?
Ha! This isn't controversial. This is a known fact that British pizza is the worst in the world.
Wow.
In this country,
not controversial.
In the UK, you got to be really careful. You have to really work to find there's usually one decent pizzeria in town, and you're going to have to work a lot of orders before you figure out which one knows how to do it. There's a bit of a renaissance here, maybe a bit of a rebirth of the art form where the pizza chefs really appreciate the art form in some places. So it's getting better. But certainly, you know, not what it should be. And I'll give you another controversial one right on top of that. I'd say Finland and Sweden have the best pizza in the world. It's all made by, ooh, like, Iraqi immigrants and stuff. Like, it's... not a generalization. It's just mainly an immigrant profession, right? But Finland and Sweden, man, there's something about the sauce and the cheese and... And it's thin white crust pizza, not thick bready stuff over there.
So even just like your standard margarita, is just better.
Yeah. The mainly it's like value for money in pizza matters, right? So you have to, if you order a pizza in Finland, you can order one in the middle of the night from your local strip mall, and it'll be better than what you can get in many restaurants here in the UK. And that's you know, it's a tough opinion, but fair.
It's a tough, I don't know which I like better. To completely just blanket statement, this entire country's pizza is garbage, or the fact that you refer to pizza making as an art form.
Yeah, yeah.
It is an art form.
But, yeah, well, it's yeah. Pizza is beautiful when you do it right.
That's true. All right. Back to like the sciencey questions. What's your favorite scientific word or phrase?
Oh, what did I already said, the one about no discipline with science in the name is a science or whatever. So now you're
that's a good one.
You really put me on the spot. Oh, the 42.
There you go. The answer, 42 is the
answer to all questions, right? Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah. How have we not had that yet?
Go on. That's it's a fantastic answer for favorite.
Yeah.
What's your least favorite scientific word or phrase?
I think my least favorite in anything is when people start a sentence as a something. Like, as a scientist, I would like to say, like, no, just say what you mean. I don't need to, I'd like to evaluate the opinion on its own merit, not based on who's saying it, you know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Very true. Very true. If you could rename one planet in our solar system, what would you call it?
Well, obviously this one, because, you know, that the real estate seems to be the most valuable on this one still. What would I call it? Well, what was her name that we had forgotten in DNA?
Rosalind Franklin.
There you go. Yeah. We'll call it Franklin for her. See?
Aw. Mm. That's sweet. What is your favorite useless science fact?
There's so many. Today I learned, because we're all in three very far away time zones, so I looked up some time zone stuff, and today I learned that there is something called the Lord Howe Island in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's the least populated time zone in the world, and I think they're not counting something in the ocean that has no population, but a place that has some population, and it's a UTC plus 10.5. So 10.5 hours ahead of me or whatever. Yeah. In the Tasman Sea. So that's my today's useless fact. Yeah.
That implies every day he learns something and he categorizes it under useless.
Yeah.
There's like one little slot in his head. Something goes in there in the morning. And then at night it goes away and he wakes up. Here comes another one.
I know. I feel like Danny has like two buckets on his desk, or like those, you know, in trays. And he has like a useful in tray and a useless in tray. And the useful in tray is empty.
Yeah. So like, this
is mayonnaise, Lord Howe Island, like all of this. It's not helping.
Hey, mayonnaise came from Benjamin. Give credit where credit's due. By the way, I got the custard thing wrong. I checked that out here in the background. It's the opposite. No, you can't swim in it. As in, custard is almost liquid when you pour it out of a jar. But if you fill a swimming pool with it, you can walk on it.
You can,
like, it becomes solid enough to walk on.
So I was thinking about that. When you said it, I was wondering if, because people talk about non-Newtonian fluids, right?
That's what it is. There you go.
Yeah. Okay. I thought so. I was wondering if, like, you can swim through it, but then when you walk across it, you can, because I could picture that Mythbusters episode. But for folks who have stuck around, you have got to enjoy the correction.
Yeah.
All right. Final question. For all the marbles, if you had to sing one karaoke song to save humanity from an alien invasion, what would it be?
Hero by Enrique Iglesias.
Oh, that's beautiful. I can see you belting that out with explosions in the background. Oh.
Yeah. It's the first rapid fire question I was actually rapid on. It was easy.
It was easy. No thinking at all.
I mean, the rest of the scientists tend to have issue with it.
Yeah, like if there's actually an apocalypse coming and I don't get to sing and save the world, then there are other songs that I would play in the background as we all go out, though. They wouldn't be as cute as Enrique. What would you guys have playing? What would you as play going outside? Out? Yeah.
Oh, the Benny Hill soundtrack.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Yakety sax. What would I play? I don't know. I've never been asked a rapid fire question. Strangers by the Kinks. I love that song. I don't know why it's in my head right now. I love that song. Yeah. It's a peaceful song. I'm going to make peace with that song before the planet explodes.
Well, speaking of the looming apocalypse, we're coming up on the splitting point between our two shows. So if you're listening to this on the Nerd and the Scientist feed, you will have to continue listening to the next part on Talking Ass, which you can find on Spotify. But we will say that the episode will continue in a format that will be perhaps less polite than our average episode. So if you have kids listening,
we don't know that yet. Yeah.
We don't know that yet.
Get your parents' permission before going to part two.
Yeah. Hide your kids, hide your wife. Yeah. Yeah, for the folks who are leaving us here, Danny, where can people find you or your podcast on the interwebs?
Oh, on the internet, it's called Talking Ass. It has a tie-dye donkey as a logo. It's easy to find wherever you listen to podcasts. It is on YouTube too, but there's no video element at the moment, so audio only. I like you to be able to achieve something with your hands, and then you also avoid staring at my ugly mug all day. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for having me.
No, it's been a pleasure. This has been so fun. And I'm excited for the second half. Benjamin, where can people find you if you want to remind our listeners and viewers?
Science, actually. Go to Facebook. That's where it's biggest. But you can find us on Twitter or Mastodon or Blue Sky or Instagram or all the other ones. And you can find us, of course, on TikTok and YouTube for if you want to watch this show. And our podcast is the one with the giant duck floating in space in the logo. For no reason.
And some doggies. Don't forget the doggies.
And don't forget the doggies.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's right.
Every self-respecting podcast episode should mention doggies in some.
At least once. Capacity. Yeah. Especially, I mean, we mentioned Newton, and Newton is my dog's name, so.
That's right.
Cool.
Yeah, didn't know when I mentioned Newtonian gravity that I was secretly talking about him. All right. And you can find me at Fun Fact Science on all the good social media platforms, if there are any, but otherwise on all the bad ones. And we will see some of you next time on the next episode of Science Actually Presents the Nerd and the Scientist, and the rest of you on the part two of this episode over on Talking Ass.
Thank you.
Many millions of years ago, a race of hyper-intelligent, pan-dimensional beings got so fed up with the constant bickering about the meaning of life that they commissioned two of their brightest and best to design and build a stupendous supercomputer to calculate the answer to life, the universe, and everything.
Deep Thought. We want you to tell us the answer.
The answer to what?
The answer to life, the universe, everything. We'd really like an answer. Something simple.
I have to think about that. Return to this place in exactly 7.5 million years.
Is it finished? Oh, no, there's more. There's more.
They go back.
What, 7.5 million years later?
That's right. They do.
Answer for you? Yes, but you're not going to like it.
It doesn't matter. We must know it.
All right. The answer to the ultimate question of life, the universe, and everything is... ...42.
Beep, beep, boop. Catchy jingle. We need a catchy jingle.
Catchy jingle. This is the part where we put in the jingle. Snappy, snappy words and songs. Makes you want to buy these products. La, 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 la. I know what you're thinking, Kavi. I know what you're thinking.
What am I thinking?
I have earlobes with holes in them that I like to stuff little sparkly things into, like earrings. What you got for me now, Science Socks?
I mean, that's perfect because Science Socks has like the perfect things to shove in your tiny ear holes. They have James Webb Space Telescope tiny things that you can shove in your ear holes. They have Mars Lander things that you can shove in your ear holes. They even have, get this, they what? Even have space shuttle shaped bits of meteorite that you can shove in your ear holes. Tell me where else you're going to find that.
Head to toe, Science Socks has literally got you covered. It's fantastic.
It's wild. Although I wouldn't say head to toe. I would say head and toe. Nothing in between.
Well, they do have a really cool umbrella that looks like the parachute for the Perseverance of the rover, which you hold with your hand, which is middle-ish, but then it's over your head. Look, whatever. Go to sciencesocks.com/nerd. sciencesocks.com/nerd. And if you purchase anything from that URL, 10% of all proceeds go to STEM programs to help kids learn science.
Amazing. 10% of your purchase could be going to a STEM charity. Fantastic. I love it. Makes me happy.
All right, everyone. Hope you visit that shop. Enjoy, and many cozy footwearings to you.